Well, I'm a desert child from a border town where they set you up just to
Welcome back to the How I Got That Way podcast. I am your host, Brandon Doble. This is show number 3 in the John Doble series that I recorded about 10 years ago. To this point in the story, my dad has been taken to Arkansas by his father, upon which they were abandoned, and his grandfather had to come or send for them. They were returned back to Oakland, and they have been taken down because no one could take care of them. I'm going to try to unwrap that piece of the puzzle in this or the next episode. No one was able to take care of these 6 kids, so they're taken to Los Angeles. My great-grandmother could not take them, so my grandfather took them to the foster courts upon which they were all shipped out to different foster families or adopted. And this is the beginning of the story of my dad's life in Los Angeles. The final episode of the 4-part series will be about my dad's life in San Francisco, being put in shelter in juvenile hall, going to Edgewood Home for Boys and Girls, and then the famous Soapbox Derby. To this point, I hope you've enjoyed it. I certainly have enjoyed listening to it again, editing the show, trying to make it sound halfway decent. I'm kind of looking forward to what episode 4 brings. But right now, let's listen to my dad's life in Los Angeles and all the adventures and misadventures he gets in down there. Thanks again for listening. Here you go.
All right. Shooting documentary, part 2. We were at El Monte. He's been buried in a well. He's escaped. He hates adults from this point on. Now he's going to steal some money from these sons of bitches. Teach him a lesson. So let's start there. So you got buried in the well. What happens after that? What happens after the well?
After I got out of the well, the foster home is your standard chores and all that stuff. But there was 2 kids with me that lived there with me.
What were their names? They're brothers, right?
They're brothers. I don't remember their names now. One was about my age, one was a couple of years younger. And we had to do the housework every day and dusting and cleaning and stuff. And one day I opened a drawer and I found 2 silver dollars. And
so she was using you as basically child labor, right?
Yeah, that's right. We were just being, you know, we did all the work just like servants. But anyway, there was a horse riding place nearby that we knew about, and it was $1 an hour to ride a horse. And I thought, well, I have 2 silver dollars. There's 3 of us, but the younger brother can ride behind the other guy, his brother. And so the 2 of us will take horses. We'll rent the horses and we'll just ride off into the sunset.
And you're about 10 years old right now, right?
You had to be, 45. So you had to be 9 or 10.
Anyway. 9 or 10.
So we went to the horse riding and I stole a box of raisins. I figured that would be good for food. And
So before you go on, hold on, before you get to the raisin part, so I just want to get a chronology of this. So you've been in Arkansas. And that was in the war, and your grandfather had brought you back. Grandpa Faramia had brought you back from Arkansas. Was that 44 or 45? Do you remember?
I think it was 44. Had to be 44.
And you didn't stay with him for very long, right? In Albany.
We never stayed in Albany. We stayed in Richmond.
Right, but when you were with your mom, and before they took her in, and she went to the hospital,
or
whatever.
Richmond.
That was after Arkansas, you were in Richmond?
Yeah.
And that's when you ran away and came home and were sleeping under the porch,
right,
or whatever?
Right.
Okay, and so then he brought you down to your dad.
No, he got a hold of my dad, because my dad was working at Hunter's Point at the time, and said, you come and get these kids, because Irma can't take care of them anymore.
But he had gone off, so your dad had gone off to Knoxville, and then he'd come back to California and not told you guys he was coming back to California?
Right, nobody knew.
He
just deserted us, actually. I think what he did is he got us back to Arkansas and he figured that we'd be, we'd all just disappear out of his life. He went to Knoxville. Well, his problem was drinking and gambling, mostly. He was smart as hell. He was into electronics. He did all that kind of stuff. And so he was valuable to the service. So they paid him well, but he was supposed to be sending us money, but we didn't get any money.
So he managed you and your 5 brothers and sisters and your mom,
right,
on this little farm in Arkansas. And when he came, how many times did he come back to this? Do you remember?
I think he came back once in the summertime. he came back, and it was the last time we saw him.
Jeez. So you were about 8 at that point.
Yeah.
So he comes back, and you and Richard and Shirley are running the farm, and your mom's taking care of the inside.
Well, no, Shirley was taking care of the inside.
All right, your mom had basically lost the
place. Yeah, she was still able to take care of the babies, you know, which was Suzette, was Carol Ann then anyway, and Gary, they were really young. Suzette was just months old. Gary was probably a year and a half old or something.
Well, so Gary's not the youngest, Suzette is?
Suzette is, yeah.
Okay.
Carol Ann was
her name back then, right? Okay. Right.
Gary was the next, and then Janet, and then Richard.
And the Union and Shirley.
Shirley, yeah.
Okay, so you're 8. So anyway, back to El Monte. So I just wanted to do chronology of that. So your dad takes you down to L.A., dumps you off of Child Protective Services.
No, wait a minute. No. What happened was, is we came back. My grandfather came and got us, or sent money so we could come back. So my mother took us down to the Greyhound bus station. We went to the train and got on a train and drove back to California. And then my grandfather had rented a place which used to be housing, military housing during the war. So this had to be right after the war.
So like August, September of 40, maybe was the war still going on?
The war was probably still going on, yeah, by that, because it was 44, I think, 43 or 44. Anyway, and we stayed there, but it was pretty bad because we had bed bugs. Bed bugs to the point where the bedposts were literally black, covered with bugs.
Oh.
And Richard peed the bed, so that didn't make it any better. And he didn't do it on purpose, obviously. He was just a kid. But I just got to the point where I said, man, we got to do something here. I got to go tell my grandparents because my mother just wasn't able to handle it. And so I went, I slept under the bush, and my grandfather came out and found me and said, what are you doing? And I told him. So then he got a hold of my father. My father was at that time was working at Hunter's Point. He had moved back to San Francisco. Working there, but nobody knew that. But my grandfather found him somehow, and he said, "You come and get these kids." And so he came and picked us up and took us down to my grandmother, his mother, and she was in her 70s at the time. And she says, "I can't take care of these kids." So he took us down to the courthouse, and they put us up, like your witness in the witness chair.
What did he say? Do you remember anything he said to you when he was taking you to that courthouse?
Not really done a lot, just he says, I'm gonna take you down, my mother is gonna take care of you, and then she said she couldn't do it, so then he says, well, you gotta go to the courthouse, and they're gonna put you in, they're gonna take care of you. I said, well, I know.
Right, you're 8, 9 years old.
Yeah, right, so we went, and it was kind of interesting, kind of exciting, because I got to sit on the witness stand, up at a chair. The judge asked me, do you want to be adopted? And I says, no, I don't want to be adopted. And so then Shirley got, she says, no, I don't want to be adopted. Richard, I don't want to be adopted. And the little ones didn't get a chance because they were too young. So they adopted. But what I did find out recently from Suzette, her father, she was the youngest, her father was the attorney that did the adoptions.
Right.
And he could have adopted all of them to the same family, but he couldn't make as much money. By adopting the different families, he got made more money from each family.
Oh, no way.
So, yeah. So that's
another nice little twist in the, could have kept you guys all together instead.
Well, not all of us, but the younger three. And so anyway, we went to different foster homes, and Shirley, I think she didn't make it the first foster home. And so they moved her to another one, and that one she liked. And I had the first thought, Richard went to Baldwin Park, and he was younger, and they just used him for cleaning the rabbit cages. That's all he did all day. They raised commercial rabbits, and his job was to take care of the rabbits. That's what he did. And so anyway, I went to El Monte, and I went to Cherry Lee School. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, that was where you went to the Freedom Train.
Yeah, Mrs. Anderson.
You talked all about Mrs. Anderson.
Well, the deal was, when I first went into foster homes, my first foster home, the Raymonds down in El Monte, we were just there to be servants. We were supposed to take care of the outside chores and the inside chores. That's all we did all day long. Either go outside and do chores or go inside and do chores. Very little time for just play.
Right.
But I remember the first, when I first went into foster, because I hadn't been separated from my siblings for, you know, a long time. I mean, all my life.
Right.
It's airborne.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, here I am all by myself. And so I remember at night I would cry in my bed. And I did this for a while. I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks or something. And finally I decided, no, this is bullshit. They don't give a damn about me. I'm going to do what the hell I want to do. And so that's when I decided to run away and do different things. So I ran away a few
times.
That's
when your life of crime began.
Well, when it ran out of his crime.
More gruel, sir. That's your Oliver Twist life began at that point. And so,
so now we're at Elm. Now you've stolen the money. You've taken the 2 coins.
All right.
The
yeah, we went horseback riding, but we didn't realize that they sent this guy with us on a horse. You know, one of the guys that worked there.
So your plans
are
foiled.
Our plan was screwed up right off the bat. And so we rode, though, for the hour, you know, and then we got off and came back to the horse stable. And then we thought, boy, by this time they know we ran away. We're criminals, you know, they're going to be looking for us. So we started walking back, and there's a river. We didn't live that far from the Los Angeles River. And but it was dry in the summertime, but there was holes, you know, where the water would gather. And as we were walking up, they had a place called Lake Shangri-La. It was a swimming hole, as I remember, it was Lake Shangri-La. Anyway, it was a swimming hole, and they had a lifeguard, and they had buoys out with ropes and stuff for people to swim. But we didn't want to go there because we thought if they saw us, they would turn us in, you know. So we went upstream a little ways, and we found a place, and none of us could swim. But it was hot, and there was a place that we could get in the water and wade into about our knees, and then get down and kick off and glide, you know what I mean? Kick off and glide, just like kids do. And so me and the older brother got across the other side, but the younger brother didn't go as far as we did, and apparently there was a hole we didn't know about, the inlet or something, and he went down. And then his brother jumps in to help him, and they're pushing each other down, you know what I mean? And I said, geez, I got to try looking around for a stick or something. I could, you know, so I couldn't find, there was nothing there. So I ran back and got the lifeguard and said, these guys are drowning. So he ran up and pulled them out. And then the next thing you know, there's a whole crowd of people. The sheriff is there, and I'm these guys are going coughing and barfing, you know what I mean, trying to get the water out of them. And I'm whispering to him, hurry up, you guys, as soon as we get a chance, we got to get out of here. There's sheriffs here. They're going to arrest us. So they waited, and when they both felt like they jumped up and we ran off, they were screaming at us to come back. Anyway, we went home and caught hell in, of course. But
did they boot you out of the house at that point?
No, what happened was, is that apparently, unbeknownst to us, they called a social worker. And the social workers in those days were all young women just out of college, you know what I mean? They wanted to do good. They wanted to save people. And, you know, God save us from those people. But anyway,
they're still like that, by the way, Bob.
Huh?
They're still like that.
I think so, yeah. All the best one I ever had was Mr. Watkins in San Francisco. But at any rate.
You can talk about him later.
Yeah. So then the next thing I knew, someone came to get me and said, you're moving to downtown Los Angeles. So I moved to 52nd between Broadway and Figueroa in Los Angeles. And this is probably 44, 45 now. And
So they took you out of there because Child Protective Services took you out of there?
Yeah.
Because of the running away thing? Or?
Yeah, apparently. They didn't want to. Because that wasn't the first time I'd run away. I'd run away a couple times before. Yeah. And I guess they just felt that I wasn't going to be a nice person to keep. So
right.
Get rid of me. Anyway, so then I went to, and Mrs. Teal, who was in her 70s, and her daughter, who was 58, were the house that I lived in, but it was like a rooming house. And there was a guy that was a cook, and he lived there upstairs, and I lived in a room. And all we had to be there was for, I had to go to school, and I had to be there for meals, and which was easy. And so I had a paper route, and to make a little extra money, I made extra money on the paper route.
Do you remember what you guys had for meals? Were they normal meals? Or?
They were normal meals, yeah. She was a Mexican lady.
Oh.
And so we had tortillas and a lot of Mexican food, which I thought was fantastic. Anyway.
Right. I didn't know she was Mexican.
Yeah, Mrs. Teal was Mexican. Obviously married.
Right.
So, but anyway, there was no man. Her husband was long gone, I guess. So was her daughters. At any rate, so that was an experience because for me, because I had freedom. And what I did was the paper routes. I did that every night. And then once a week I had a...
Was this where you went to the school with the 5,000 black kids?
3,000, yeah.
3,000 black kids. So you'd gone to another school in El Monte, and now you're going to another school over here.
Right. Okay. El Monte was Cherry Lee School.
Okay. So before you talk about the paper route, I want to talk about the school.
Well, the school was... I think there was three Caucasians, myself, Edward Huerta.
Well, that's not a Latino, but anyway.
Well, yeah, but his mother would tell you he's Basque.
Oh,
she was very serious about that. Boy, because I said, are you Mexican? She says, oh, no, we're not Mexican, we're Basque. Not even Spanish.
Right.
We're Basque. So anyway, so that was a big deal. And so he and I, and this girl, but she only lasted about 2 weeks. But he and I had to fight every single...
And this is in Watts, basically, right?
Well, in those days, it was right at the edge of Watts. Now it's right...
Do you remember what street it was on?
52nd, between Broadway and Figueroa.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So South Central Los Angeles. Basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And so anyway, we went to Main Street School. And so Edward and I had to fight every recess and every noon hour. And we got really good at it. So the bigger kids started sticking up for us, you know. And so then we got... Then we had it made. We could... Nobody wanted to fool with us anymore. So anyway, Edward and I also decided we'd have a corner, paper corner. We had a bus transfer corner, and the newspapers went from 5 cents to 7 cents.
Wasn't there another black kid you became friends with?
Yeah, Yancey.
Yancey, right.
Yancey was a friend of me. He was a really, really a sweet kid. Really, not the brightest kid in the world, but he was just sweet as can be. Just really a nice...
And he was involved in the paper route stuff too, right, a little bit?
No, he wasn't. His mother wouldn't let him do that. His younger brother was really pissed off at white people. I don't blame him, but I had a problem with him. We never fought or anything, but just, you know,
yeah.
Obviously not friendly. So anyway, we had this corner. So we deliver our papers. We got the papers at 3 o'clock after school. We just make our paper route. Then we get down to the corner, and they would drop off the papers at the corner. And it was a bus transfer corner where the business people would come on one bus and stop. The bus would stop, and each would run over to get the bus this way. And so at the running over, we'd sell them papers. We had the papers laid out there for them. And the papers went from 5 cents to 7 cents, and we could never make change fast enough. So they threw a dime, and we kept the 3 cents. So in those days, you could go into a bar if you were a kid. And so there was a bar down the street. So what we did is when we had leftover papers, we'd take them down to the bar and find some guy falling off his stool drunk and sell them for $3 or $4, sell all these papers to him. And so it worked out pretty good.
And this is where you began your life of crime. This is when all the stuff
So anyway, then we, and on Saturdays, we would do, we'd go to these businesses. They want you to put these little stickers you put on the doorknobs, you know. And that's what we do, and they'd give us whatever they made. I don't remember what it was. Different things they made, we could get some. And then we'd go down to Cress's, and I think it was Newberry's was the other store. Anyway, we had these paper, rolled up paper back for the paper racks, you know, on the back of the bikes. And we'd steal combs, and we'd steal all kind of little things, you know, like that.
From what?
From the department store.
Oh, you were stealing from... Why were you stealing from the department store? Just because you could?
Just because we could, yeah. It was there. It was easy. Yeah, we never needed it. I mean, it wasn't something we needed. It just, but what happened was, when I first moved to Los Angeles, went to Main Street School, I didn't have any clothes. So they sent me down to the social worker sent me down to the warehouse to get clothes. Well, the clothes they had were overalls, bib overalls, and Mackinac jackets, and I'm going to a black school. And I said, man, this is crazy. And so I had to start stealing to try to get some clothes. I wasn't ashamed to go to school then. Anyway, so then we, there were three of us that used to run around together. And I don't remember the other kids. It was me and Edward and another kid. I don't remember the last kid's name. Anyway, I told you about the Good Humor Man thing.
Oh, want to hear about it.
The ice cream truck was a Good Humor truck, and they had these
little basically, kids. You guys are running scams during this time. You're free during the day, and you're just going off doing what kids
free
do.
Free during the night.
Right, during the night. So what time did you be home?
I think it was midnight or after a lot of times.
Oh.
2 o'clock in the morning sometimes.
You're 10 years old.
Yeah.
And then this is, just said show up at the time. She wasn't checking to see if you were in your
no, bed. No. She didn't, apparently didn't check.
Okay.
But we would go up at midnight on the roofs and fly these little, we'd steal these little glider airplanes, little balsa wood things.
Yeah.
And throw them off the roof with firecrackers strapped to them. And so they'd blow up, you know, and stuff like that. And we'd also go, I remember one time they had this service station. They used to have these soda pop machines. They weren't really machines. They were just a tank, square tank with a lid on it and a place to put your money in. And then what you do is you lift the lid up, and sometimes they didn't have a lid, there was ice water. And the soda pop, it's the lid sticking up. And so you slide the lid along and come out, you know, it would come out, put your money in, you could get it out. Well, what we did, because we didn't have any money. So what we did is there were three of us, and one of us would go keep the service station guy busy talking, and the other two would take, we had a bottle opener and a straw. And so we'd pop the lids and suck the stuff out of it. So
just a bunch of hoodlums, criminals.
Yeah, and then the other thing we would do, it's just to make money, you know. And so the other thing we do is they had pay phones on almost every corner. And I learned this in Richmond, by the way, because the same thing had pay phones. And what you do is you take tissue paper.
Who taught you this in Richmond?
Oh, some kids, I don't know.
But all right.
Anyway, so you take tissue paper and stick it up in the coin return, okay? Well, if you're going to make a call, you'd put your money in. Say you put 40 cents in to make a telephone call or wherever you're going to go. And if the call didn't go through, the money would come back. Well, it wouldn't come back.
So you're off running around. So Good Humor Man, that's a good one.
Yeah, he just took him and go down the street and they'd ring their silly little
Good Humor Man's an ice cream truck.
Ice truck, yeah. And they'd ring the little bell and the kids would come out, you know, and they'd stop. When they got enough kids, they'd stop and they'd sell ice cream. Well, we would run along behind three of us, and one of us would jump up on the bumper, and they had this flat bumper on the back, and open the thing and hand out boxes of Eskimo pies, you know. So we'd take it, and then we'd let them drive off, and then we'd go with the Eskimo pies. Well, he got wise to us, so he put a bell on his
cap. How long did this go on for?
Oh, we probably did it three or four times before he got wise that there was something going on. Anyway, he put a bell in the cab, apparently, and when he opened the back door, the bell went off, he slammed on the brakes. And it wasn't my turn to go in and be in the front. The other kid's turn to be in front, I was in the middle. And so the kid opens the door, he slams on the brakes, he goes inside, and I go smash it up behind him, and the kid behind me smashes it up to me. And then the guy comes running out and yelling, "I hit you, little guy!" You know, and we're, of course, all three just pulling in different directions. He couldn't hold us, so we took off. But that ended that ice cream scam, and we couldn't do that anymore. So we decided there was a Boysen Pie Company. And we knew about this pie company because they had a lot of trucks around town, so they were very popular there. And we found out where they were, and we figured out how to get in. There was a chain link fence all the way around the place. But at night, at midnight, we would go down there. And we dug a hole under the fence. And we could go under the fence. And what they did with the truck was they load these trucks at night because they went early out in the morning. Maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, they'd take off, start delivering pies. And so they would load the trucks and the trucks were open, you know what I mean? And there was a guard and he would make a walk around the warehouse, big warehouse. He'd walk all the way. It took about 15, 20 minutes to make the circuit around. So we timed it and we figured out when he would come. So we'd run in and we'd grab pies and take them to the guy, she'd put them under the fence, you know what I mean? So we ended up each have a pie. And and one night, I guess he got wise to us, because instead of going, he walked past like he was going to, but apparently he stopped on the other side and waited. And when he saw us go in, and then he came around yelling, "You damn kids, get the hell out of here!" So of course we threw the pies over the fence and dove under the fence. That was the end of that scam. So then we, right, I told you I had a paper out, and we had a Sunday morning paper. Well, the Los Angeles Times is a huge newspaper. I mean, I had to make three trips with my bags to fill the bags up to get the whole route done. Mm-hmm. And they would drop them off at the service station at a corner. I think it was a standard station. Anyway, I think one morning, guy drives in, the convertible was Clark Gable. He drove in and he says, "Hey kid, you got an extra paper there?" And I says, "No, I don't. I just have enough for my customers." So I didn't give him a paper. But anyway, he says, "That's okay, kid. That's okay. I'll get one down the street." Anyway, it was kind of fun. And, you know, just to.
Were you stunned that it was Clark Gable? You
knew who no, was? I knew that it was a movie person. There's a lot of movies. That was
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of movies before. In fact, we used to go down to by the swimming pool at the Coliseum. There was a swimming pool, right? And there's all there was between the sidewalk and the swimming pool was a fence. So we went down and we could watch Esther Williams swim all the time and different movie stars be swimming in the pool. And as kids, you know, So we'd watch.
You guys bought bicycles or something by this point?
Oh, I bought a J.C. Higgins bicycle, brand new for $15. I saved up like crazy and bought a J.C. Higgins bicycle for $15, brand new. And man, I was king. I mean, I used to have to carry my papers on my shoulders, you know what I mean? So that bicycle made a hell of a difference.
Really?
Oh, God, that was a big deal.
And how would you lock it up?
I didn't because we had a garage in the back. I just just stick it in the back, you know.
Did you get to take it with you when you went back up to San Francisco?
No, nothing. Every time you move, they just took your kids. They don't take anything with you.
You don't get to take any of your stuff?
No. Just
it's a travesty.
Yeah, that's what I say. Especially that bicycle. Of course, in juvenile hall, it wouldn't have done me any good anyway. Right.
But, so, wait, how long were you in how long were you here in South Central?
About, I would guess probably 8-9 months. Because I know I went to school. And I finished, I don't think I started the school year. I went kind of in the middle of the school year, but I finished that school year. And I remember having a Christmas there. And so I would guess probably 8-9 months, something like that.
And then why did they move you out of that place?
Well, I was hard to handle, apparently. They thought I was hard to handle.
The lady?
Yeah.
Well, you weren't coming home at night, so, I mean, obviously.
Yeah, they knew, they found out that I was staying out.
So she asked for you to be taken out?
I don't know if she did or not, or the social workers just got on that she was not able to handle the social kids anymore or something. I don't know exactly what happened there.
So we're going to stop the episode at the point where my dad is removed from the foster home in Los Angeles. I always find it incredibly sad for me to hear the story about him and that bite. He saved all his money. He's 10 years old. $15 in 1946 was a lot of money. Saved it up so it could help him with his paper route. And then he's just taken out of the home and shipped off to San Francisco, where they said that he had family. And the saddest part for me about the whole story is the fact that he did not get to take that bike with him. And he always, I remember asking him that. I said, "Dad, you didn't get to take the bike?" And he just said, "Yeah, that's just the way it was." And I think that says a lot about my dad's survival mechanism, what he had to do just to survive being in that life that, you know, I know he was very fond of that bike and that he didn't get to take it. And he was able to say, "Yep, that's just how it goes." It just shows, one, his ability to survive it, but two, his ability to repress it. I saw my dad cry twice in my life, and one time was about him talking about that bike. So very poignant for me. I think very poignant for him. Thank you for listening to this point. We'll be back next week with the final installment of the John Doble series. Hope you've enjoyed it so far. We'll be back with you soon. Take care. And I don't know why I tagged along that night. Ben and Nick will never do ain't much right. Maybe I just wanted to try to fit and found an unlocked truck that we broke in. Well, I recognize the truck belonged to Tom Deloach. He was my childhood football coach. Friend of my mama and a decent guy, but I didn't want to seem soft to me.